Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
On News Talk.
Dublin's Metrolink project is expected to need around 8,000 construction workers, with construction expected to start by 2028. Programme Director Sean Sweeney has said that Ireland may have to recruit many from abroad to meet that demand, but with construction already facing major labour shortages and workers continuing to emigrate due to high living costs and better opportunities and the housing crisis, serious questions are being raised about how the state can attract and house, indeed, the workforce needed to deliver the project. We have on the line Councillor Feljan Jose. Good afternoon to you, Feljan.
Good afternoon.
Feljan, can I ask you about the manpower to build the Metrolink? First of all, 8,000 construction workers. That seems like quite the ask.
Look, it's a mega project. It's exactly what was planned for the last couple of years. When you look at the number of workers needed for the other big project that we built, like the Port Tunnel, like it was in the thousands of people. This is what it takes. This is how it's built all across Europe. So, yeah.
This is what it takes, but is it feasible?
I think so, yeah. It would take a lot of work between now and 2028, 2030 to kind of build up that manpower. That would mean investing in apprenticeships now, investing in all these kind of skills now to build up skills locally. A lot of these will be local labour. A lot of these will be work jobs for people in Ireland. And, you know, a lot of that would require upskilling to do these jobs. But then we would need to bring in people who have expertise building rail systems, building metros, building underground tunnels all around Europe and around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how every city, you know, delivers these mega projects. It's big, it's complicated, but getting the right people from all around the world and putting them together with local workers and local construction workers is how you deliver these.
Feljan, we're going to try and fix your line and I will come back to you as soon as we do, because it's very crackly at the moment and difficult to hear you properly. I'm joined on the line as well by architect Roisin Murphy. Roisin, good afternoon to you. Oh, she gone? Sounds like she is. Okay, we'll see if we have Ciarán Breen. Ciarán, do we have you?
Oh, hi, how are you doing?
Third time lucky, Ciarán.
Yeah.
What level of construction goes into this Metrolink, can you tell me? And do we have the manpower to build it ultimately?
Like we were saying, 8,000 men, like you have to think of it, like you need precision engineers, you're going to need block layers, carpenters, you're going to need every skill in the building trade is going to be involved in this thing. So I suppose you just have to see from the pool of workers that are there, like where, how many outside workers are going to have to come in. But I'd say it's going to be a substantial amount of foreign workers that they'll have to try and attract them into the country somehow.
Yeah, and we'll need to attract them with the right package and the right living conditions and circumstances as well, which, you know, we're not particularly strong on, given, you know, recent examples. Metrolink, just to summarise, Programme Director Sean Sweeney said the largest contracts for the development of the 19-kilometre rail line planned to run from the south of Dublin's city centre to Swords in the north of the county would be in international firms that are expected to bring in the personnel from abroad. Would you agree with that? That there's no company here that can take on a project of that scale, Ciarán?
Well, yeah, I suppose to take on the whole job, I suppose what they'll do is one company will come in and they'll sub it out to smaller companies. You know, they're not like one company to take on that size of a project. I don't think it'll be a collaboration, I'd say. Of and they'll be bringing in smaller Irish firms. They'll be subbing out a lot of work to them. So they should have men on the ground for it, you know.
Yeah, they'll bring in a proportion of workers looking to supplement with local labour. We've done extensive Irish workforce analysis. So do you think we have the workforce here, supplemented obviously by some overseas workers as well, brought in by those subcontractors?
I don't think, not at that scale. You know, I can't see it, like, you know, even the biggest firms in Ireland, like Sisk and all the really big players, they don't have anywhere near them numbers. and they would be, because like Norman takes on this the scale of this project is enormous. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a 10-year project, 30 billion or something quid, like, so the biggest jobs they'd be taking on would be a couple of million, like, so they don't have, there's no company in Ireland have them kind of numbers, because they don't, the projects, they don't do huge projects like that in Ireland every you know, it's a once in a generation project.
Of course it is, and it's of gigantic scale, as you say yourself. Architect Roisin Murphy is with us now. Good afternoon to you, Roisin.
Hi, good afternoon, Anna. How are you?
Is this kind of a huge task? Are we able for it? What are your thoughts on it?
My thoughts are, it's not a question of whether we're able for it. It just has to be done in terms of the city, the survival of the city, in terms even of feeding housing, business, we need this. And I mean, we've done this once before, where we dropped the ball on the basis of pressures, etc. Mm-hmm. And this is really necessary for us as a city to be even considered in terms of a livable city. We don't have a choice.
You made the point before that everyone in your industry is almost shocked that it hasn't been done already.
Well, I said one of my first jobs as a young student was to do a historical analysis, believe it or not, of the London Underground. It was one of those really odd projects you did where you went and you looked for historical features. And I remember seeing that there were specialist builders. Like you're talking about, there was Victorian detailing in some of this. Like, we are hundreds of years behind the ball on this. We also are incredibly good at infrastructure. We've delivered the Port Tunnel, but we've also unpicked each other's infrastructure as policies get changed and, you know, we go through cycles. But Pascal Donoghue apparently has put in a master plan financially that goes beyond governance of one particular government. And this is fundamental to how this is going to be delivered. And I know my own institute, the Institute of Architects, are asking for this, that we do long-term planning so that whatever comes down the road, this is delivered for the citizens, not only of Dublin, but of the nation. Because if you're coming up to the airport, if you're coming to do business, walking out of that airport and trying to find a bus, it's like landing somewhere else. You know what I mean? You're there kind of going, oh, like, we're so ahead of the ball in so many things. But this ball cannot be dropped again. We cannot go through another cycle of, like, Bertie Ahern apparently had ring-fenced this in 2005 to withstand any financial crisis. But it didn't. We're now seeing the iteration of that previous model. And just to say that when they purchased all that land at that time, people even had to pay for the value of living close to what was known as the Metro North then. So we really have to, this isn't a question of feasibility, we just have to deliver it.
In terms of the timeline, as you say, we were talking about this in Bertie Ahern's time, ring-fencing the funding for it. We're now aiming for 2027 into 2028 for the build, which means probably 2030. It could be mid-2030s before it's open, realistically. Like, I mean, we're talking 10 years away.
That's why we have to have master financial planning. We have to have governance that just, if it goes from Fianna Fáil to Fine Gael to a left-wing government to a coalition, this has to be built. It's one of the reasons why I think some of the feasibility projects stop or infrastructure stuff, because governance changes. But there is a move towards long-term infrastructural planning that kind of survives changes in government, survives changes in economic welfare. So we did have a complete disaster in 2006 and 2007. But that shouldn't obsess these projects. These projects should be outside party politics. And we had the same thing, arguably, with the Children's Hospital could have been built 12 years. I know that's a terrible thing to say, but it's the truth. Mm-hmm. So these projects need to be sustained, and we need long-term planning. That's key to it. And also, these 8,000 workers, it's a really good opportunity for us as a country to also push back against this rhetoric about inward migration. We need workers in the country, 8,000 workers to build. So we have to be more forward thinking about bringing people in to do this work, because we as a nation, we need them to help us.
Yeah. Someone said, Roisin, and I'd like your reaction to this, because I had the same thought myself. Why would young lads move home from sunny Sydney, where they have beaches, nice apartments, well-paid jobs in the construction industry, to come back here and live in damp, overpriced houses? Or worse, their childhood bedroom, which is very true.
You're going to be in that situation unless you build these trains. Like, we have to be able to develop the city. We have to, and also, I'm going to say one thing. Like, Ireland has filled the crack. I mean, I've I lecture as well in college, and I have to say that you meet an awful lot of kids in Erasmus, and they all say they're so sad leaving. Like, I know we're terribly hard on ourselves, and the housing is a disaster, but we will get it right. But the problem is, it's still great crack to live in Ireland. But I would also say, this problem of infrastructure, I'm doing some weird research project, and involves reading a lot of literature around Dublin from the turn of the century. They were still talking about the problems and not having tram lines and train lines even then, that they want one to go all the way down the North Circular Road and all this sort of stuff. So this is a problem that's like several hundred years old. It is our opportunity to really master plan this in, and that's key to financial protection. More than anything is the protection of it financially.
That
we go beyond this government, that it's seen as something that's bedded into the civil service and all of that.
We have Councillor Feljan, Jose, back on the line. Are you with us, Feljan?
I am indeed, yeah.
What are your thoughts to the conversation there with Roisin?
Look, I think I agree. I agree with Roisin. There's no country who hasn't embarked on this project of this scale has 8,000 workers lying around. But it's something that you have to do. It's something that you have to build up. And it's not just about Metrolink. It's about a kind of creating a pipeline of projects, of other railway projects over the next 10, 20, 30 years for these workers to work on, for our country to invest in, to basically, as Roisin was saying, make up for the decades and centuries of underinvestment in infrastructure. So like, this is about building up that scale, building up that capacity to deliver big infrastructure projects for the next 20, 30, 40 years. And we just have to do it.
Yeah, but it absolutely has to be done. I suppose the question is, how fast can it be done, and can we stick to a timeline, which we're not particularly good in this country. Someone says, in this country there's no shortage of workers. There are many people who are currently unemployed. Therefore, it's important to focus on training the individuals who are already here. Someone else says, bring the Japanese in to do this. Not the same crowd who did the Lewis and the Children's Hospital. Connor Doolan, can I bring you in? Erin Roderan's apprentice training manager. Connor, are you with me on the line?
Yeah, indeed, yep.
Connor, what are your thoughts on this? Have you heard the other conversations we've been having around the Metrolink?
Yes, I've heard the numerous conversations in regards to it as well. And I suppose, look, everyone's making valid points there as well. I suppose just two things that we need to address before this is, I suppose the housing crisis, that's one thing, because like, where are all these people going to stay? The next thing is the cost of living. It's so expensive. So you're trying to entice people to come back from overseas. Now, I know the government are putting measures in place, and they're doing kind of like billboards, and they're trying to get the people who left back to their home country, you know. So that's all positive. But I suppose, look, they're going to have to kind of work a little bit harder. And I suppose we need more apprentices in the system as well. You know, get these, you know, skilled kids and bring them up, skill them and get their trades. And look, if there's good, exciting work here, you know, why would they move abroad? They might stay, you know, if there's going to be a good job there. Because, like, people are saying about the building of this this new Metrolink, but what about the maintenance of it? Like, these are all going to have to be maintained.
I was going to say, and given the job that you do, Connor, building it is wonderful if we get the build done, but the maintenance of it is another thing, isn't it, in terms of drivers and mechanics to keep the cogs turning?
Of course, see, they have to factor in that as well. No, and like I said, it's good timing on the government's behalf, because it's at early stages. So to get these people, like, you know, we still have adequate time to do this, and I'm sure that's their plan in the back, is to try and get more people back. Like, you know, all the good talented people who moved abroad, it's get these people back into the skilled force, because you know all that you know, wealth of knowledge has gone to different countries, but they're bringing back a wealth of knowledge as well. So, you know, it's filling these jobs, but these are all going to be highly skilled roles, like maintaining these metros, because, you know, you're going to have electricians, you're going to have, you know, mechanical fitters, you're going to have OEM technicians, you're going to have all these super trades. But it's getting the right people into these right jobs. But as I said, it's falling right. Like, there is plenty of time there. And I suppose, look, from the government's point of view, is if you push apprenticeships, you know, try and get as many apprentices through the system as possible. And, you know, when you have, you know, if you have a lot of skilled people and I suppose a variety of jobs available to them, you know, it sounds like good jobs. You know, work in the metro, who wouldn't want to work in them, I suppose. Look, maybe I'm a bit biased because I'm from the background myself, and, you know, you know, very happy in the
role. Of course, we need the right people, but we need the plan in place to bring them back if they're not here already. And as you say, they bring the knowledge back with them, which is even better. Dunnock O'Loughlin, Dunnock, you're on the line. Do you think we have the manpower to build the Metrolink and, more importantly, on the timeline that's planned?
Well, I feel we currently don't actually have the manpower. In fact, Dunnock O'Loughlin here from ecoplan.ie, and I actually raised the issue with Michael Collins, and in fairness, this over nearly 14 years ago, and himself and Michael Healy brought it up in the Dáil about the lack of investment in apprenticeship services. Okay, and I've looked into it. In Germany, they have a different system where the local council pays the apprenticeship wages every week, and it was actually like, you know, I know a much bigger population, bigger pot to play with, okay, of pool of resources. And I know that formerly people would, in ANCO or years ago, they would come off the job and they would go into college one day a week. That's the way they do it in Germany. And it makes the education very, very relevant, because they can bring back stuff in the workforce. We learned this in college or in vice versa, right? And as it was, if you standardise the wages as well, there'll be less people jumping between jobs as well, you know. But if you don't invest in the services, it's not going to happen. And I have to say, there's one thing that's missing a trick here, and hasn't been brought up time and time again. I've been trying to raise this issue, right?
Go ahead.
Like, I'm a self-employed plumber. Most of the plumbers here, good tradesmen in Clonakilty, where I live, right? Mm-hmm. Most of them have served their time with one tradesperson. Or maybe they had an extra apprenticeship was there, maybe one or two guys. That was a small apprenticeship, one-to-one, really good, broad, because you could be doing absolutely everything, much broader thing. I had an apprentice there, he left me, went up to Cork, and he's going around carrying just insulating pipes, right? He would stay with me, much solar, underfloor heating, the works, everything, right? The problem is this, if I take on a worker in the morning, or an apprentice, right, suddenly if I'm going from paying public liability, now I've got employer liability. So first of all, straight away, my cost doubled for the year. Then secondly, I have to pay PAYE, all that sort of thing. My accountancy fees, it doubles straight away.
Mm-hmm.
You're then babysitting Millennium week to week. They're on their phone. You can't say boo to them. They might cry off. And some of them, there's some great kids out there. Don't get me wrong, at the same time as well like that. So what actually happens is that it's fit. But here's the thing. I could take on two or three guys, and there would be no difference in I can take on two or three people at that rate. Okay, if I took on more people, it would increase again. So what it's doing is actually favouring bigger companies, right? But bigger is not always better, and we see what happens with big companies now and again, too big to fail, and then quality suffers,
mm-hmm.
right? And what's going to happen is that you'll have a go heroes and 10 to 5 days coming in doing jobs, and next thing you'll have water coming down through the ceiling, and insurance rates are going up, and then it's going to get worse and worse.
Okay, it's absolutely another consideration. That's Dunnock O'Loughlin, thank you indeed for talking to us. Dunnock, there's a huge reaction to this. How did the UK get built after the war? They brought in workers, including the Irish. We need to do the same now. We've plenty of migrants coming here who'd be happy to do the work. Someone else says, how many parents want their children to go into construction today? In Australia, they value and respect the tradies and pay them well. Time to change attitudes. College isn't for everyone. Construction workers in Ireland are looked down upon. And someone else says, what planet are you all living on? Get people back to be ripped off left, right and centre. My son is moving to Australia at Christmas because of this rip-off country. At least 15 of his schoolmates are gone too. It's very sad. That's from Cahill. But thank you indeed for all of your texts on that.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.